Football Weekly Extra.
Peeping bravely at the footballing future, it's Football Weekly Extra. In this week's show, Champions League. Is Big Phil Scolari's job really on the line, like a train driver? And why the next round will contain more dead rubbers than Robinho's back garden? We look forward to Sunday's big Chelsea-Arsenal clash, the Manchester derby in the Premier League. We hear from Sid on why Getafe is more than just the Welsh employment agency. There's FA Cup news, word from Italy on another inter of discontent for Jose. All that plus copious posts, news on colonic irrigation and more in Football Weekly Extra. Well, they were beating down our doors to get onto the pod today, but here are the lucky fellows that we've picked. Kevin McCara.
Thank God I'm here.
Yes, indeed, Kevin. Think of the unlucky fellows out there shivering in the cold of misinformation type of thing. John Ashdown.
Hi, James.
Hi, John. And Barry. Hello. Busy blogging Barry.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Good to have you back, Barry.
It's good to be back. That's... Always a pleasure. Did that
excellent.
Sound convincing?
It did.
If listeners could only see the forced smile.
The rictus grin. Now, where do we start this week? There's been so much and so much to come. How about Big Phil Scolari joking now about going home to Brazil if his side failed to emerge from a Champions League group involving the likes of Cluj? How has it come to this, Kevin McCarra?
Well, first of all, isn't it interesting how kind of English clubs expect us to float through everything? Isn't it quite a reasonable thing to have a game at home at the end of the group to win to qualify for the knockout phase? I mean, England are so grandiose now and teams think they fail unless they get to semi-finals. Last night it came to this because of a weird lapses of concentration, the same as we saw perhaps in Rome. Why would Lampard commit a second bookable offence he doesn't need to do? Unless, of course, he wants to clear his disciplinary record for the knockout phase.
That's a very cynical...
I don't think it's true. I mean, I really doubt it. I think it's just a rush of blood. But he's not given to mad impulses, is he, normally? And then John Terry has no impulse at all. In fact, no pulse at all, and stands there and lets Aliou Diarra run to the near post for a header, which he wouldn't normally do. Same in the game against Roma. There's a kind of concentration lapse, attention disorder going on with the Chelsea team.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, just on the subject of last night's game, it wasn't an undeserved draw for Bordeaux,
no,
was it?
No, it wasn't. No.
But Czech had certainly been in fine form in the first half. In general, though, Chelsea have now only won one of their last five games and lost three of them.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say they're increased. You can see the number of goals they scored in the Premier League and the points total and all that. But they do have more off days. And I think the way they play now is very hard to vary it because they have a glut of midfield players and pick most of them and have one striker. And I mean, admittedly, Anelka's doing well, but it makes some stereotypes.
Well, if Newcastle can draw there, can Cluj?
Well, Cluj have absolutely nothing left, really. They've been pretty clobbered, haven't they, with the score last night? They lost at home.
3-1.
Yeah.
3-1.
So, Well, I think, let's face it, in reality, it's a terrible situation to have to beat a remaining team at Stamford Bridge to get to the next stage. It shouldn't be.
I mean, it's a poor reflection on the tournament that I've been looking at the games, the last round of the first round, last round of games. I estimate 13 out of 16 are irrelevant, which is ridiculous.
So irrelevant.
Yeah, they're dead rubbers.
Yeah.
I mean, some teams are playing to get into the UEFA Cup, obviously, but, you know, is that particularly important? But as far as getting to the next round of the Champions League are concerned, the vast majority of the games are completely irrelevant. So you've two games in that group and one other, which I can't think of off the top of my head. I think it's the Panathinaikos group.
Yes, that's a big, big group. We'll talk more about that later. What about, though, in the more immediate future, Arsenal's visit this weekend? Arsenal coming off a victory, which was a much-needed victory after the time they've had, of late Nicholas Bentner, 3 minutes from time, in pink boots. Don't know what your feelings are on that, John Ashton.
Well, on pink boots?
Yeah.
I love pink boots.
Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly the knee-length ones.
Why? You're head of marketing at Nike. Mind you, this is what they've done it for, so that we discuss Nike's pink boots?
Presumably, yeah. Maybe it's a...
There's a lovely
results,
advert.
Results, that's what...
who are they aimed at? I don't understand who else. If you can get away with pink boots, and white boots, for that matter, if you're a... Premier League footballer.
Right.
But if you're some park player or a kid turning up for your under-10s match in pink boots or white boots, you're going to be a target for the opposition and all the dads and mums on the sidelines as well.
Surely Bettner's not good enough to have pink boots anyway. I mean, even when he scored the other night, his first touch was rubbish and he managed to squeeze it in from an angle.
Well, can he carry them off? I mean, how good do you have to be to carry off pink boots? Can even Ribery carry off pink boots?
Well, but I think Ribery can, no?
Hasn't been playing.
It's a great advert that Ribery's in, no? I noticed they didn't do one of those for Nicholas Bentner. That must be in the works, even as we... Sorry,
but Bentner hadn't been scoring goals and hadn't been playing well. And then he put his pink boots on and scored.
Right.
So maybe
they're back heel on Monday as well.
Magic boots like, you know, Billy Danes in, I think it was Roy the Rovers or Tiger or whichever. You know, he had Deadshot Keane's old big clumpy ankle boots. And but they made
these
him play
were
like
with the magical power, were they?
Yeah, and I think Nicholas Bentner's maybe the same. They're just an unfortunate colour, but he's willing to incur the wrath of.
He has Liberace's old football boots. Magnificent. Okay, so do you foresee these magical magical footwear leading to a shock upset at Stamford Bridge? And would it be even a shock upset?
See, that's the thing. You don't know. Would it be a shock upset? Arsenal be good team. Not necessarily a shock upset.
I don't know. It's interesting. They've only won one of their last five. It was that Man United game. And they have had this victory midweek. But whether that's just another twitch of the stiffening corpse, I don't know. Interesting that... Who was it? Was it Clichy saying that something is now broken within the locker room following the... You know, the Gallus Cowboy affair.
Maybe he was referring to Bentner's boots. Perhaps they just attacked him in the chain rooms and stolen his studs.
But by the way, if we stick to conventional matters, they're missing 9 players. It's a lot. I mean, 2 of them are long-term, but 9 players out of your squad is not helpful.
No, indeed not. Indeed not.
I noticed a cliche came out publicly to criticise Gallus for coming out publicly to criticise everyone else. It's just, where will it end? You know, surely that's not going to help dressing room morale, him whinging about Gallus ruining dressing room morale.
And Gallus did seem quite rattled when he gave the ball away for that chance that Kiev had in Benfica. His concentration wasn't brilliant.
Indeed. No, his head has been turned, of course, by the sirens of San Siro.
Ah, 5 million.
But after Milan's great success buying Senderos from Arsenal, they
will have the set when they get the
Is he not a bit young to take up a position in the Milan back line?
Well, have you know, they have lots of young players. On Sunday as well, of course, it is the Manchester Derby. And let's have a quick nod at that before we round out part one, because Man City are playing who? Schalke tonight in the UEFA Cup? Yeah, that's a tough game, that one.
Gelsenkirchen,
All right, and well, Man United are safely through into the next round of the Champions League thanks to their 0-0 draw. Villarreal, which I know you were delighted by, Barry. But
well, it's thrilling. I think that's the fourth time they've played and not a goal yet.
Yeah, it is dull, isn't it? What about the City United game, though?
It's a tough enough one to predict. There's no doubt in my mind that Manchester United are the better team, but City have won the last two derbies. City do well at home. And City, Rubino is on fire, so hopefully it'll be a thriller, a high-scoring thriller, but I'll go for a draw. I'll sit in the fence.
Rubino's out tonight, isn't he? He's not playing in the UEFA Cup game, so is he expected to be fit for the weekend?
Well, last weekend he said he thought, he'd make it for the weekend, but this is Thursday. It's not a long way off from Sunday, is it? No, I don't know.
Isn't it not a precautionary thing? Him being
he suggested that, but I mean, I'm looking at the paper today and he didn't confirm that Rubinho would be, not in this couple of papers I've seen anyway, playing Sunday.
Wayne Rooney bigging up his own side ahead of this clash, saying it's a massive game. It'll be nice to show them who are the kings of Manchester. If they were winning trophies, the publicity that they're enjoying would irritate us. But while they're still lingering in mid-table, we're not too bothered about it, said Wayne Rooney, who's lingering in the lower end of the scoring charts at the moment. Just one, was it? No goals in 8 appearances. While you mentioned Robinho or Stephen Ireland. Stephen Ireland, in fact, who was it who posted in Clubber? What are your thoughts on Stephen Ireland this year? Notice where... Segued in nicely there.
Yes, he did.
Surely Trapattoni will be trying to get him back into the international fold. Best player at City, closely followed by Sean Wright-Phillips. One of the most consistent performers in the league so far. Must be the James Richardson streamlining. It is true that since, and I think we've probably addressed this issue before, since he basically faced up to his follicle catastrophe, he's basically been a better man for it. And I think, you know...
Forehead.
Yeah, I can understand that. No, I mean, you know, he was living a lie before with this thatching and stuff, and he's come clean. No, it's got to have just relaxed him, I think, no? Go on, tell us about in football terms, because there's an eerie silence.
He's certainly been playing well recently.
Yes,
he's become as crucial to City as Rabinho has, I think.
He scored that goal against Hull where he bent that.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of.
A bouncing ball into it. That's really skillful.
He sort of gives them a lot of. You know, there's more sort of trickery, I think, from some of the Brazilian players, but he gives them the sort of drive and sort of forward thrust, I think, quite a lot from midfield.
Absolutely, yeah.
He's shown no real interest in coming back to play for the Republic of Ireland. I think Trapattoni did approach him or sent an emissary to chat to him about coming back, and he said he didn't want to, but didn't rule it out in the future. Mm. And I think opinion at home is very much divided. Some people say he should feck off and never be allowed to play for Ireland again, and others would love to have him.
Well, I'm sure they would, because that's been one of the issues for Ireland. They haven't been able to find a replacement for him. There's no... They haven't been able to find an heir for Stephen Ireland, but that's long been his problem. Ah, oh, dearie me. No Sean Ingle today, but I'm doing my best. Now, Kevin, go on, give us a prediction on the Man City-Man United game.
Well, I think the one thing we didn't see for Arsenal last week was Man City being put under sustained pressure, which they don't cope with. I think United will win or get a scoring draw.
Interesting. John Ashton?
I could see a draw there, I think, yes.
Could you, yes.
Well and truly on the fence.
Before we leave part one, I think you owe Italian football in general an apology.
For Juve?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I'll come on to that in part two. I've got that down here.
My
under the bit where
then
it says...
Then I owe you an apology.
Jay did them a disservice, hit Woodwork twice. So we'll be coming on to that presently. One person I don't owe an apology to, though, is Mucligno, who claims that I recommended that he watch Inter against Juventus last Saturday.
Oh, far
and
from
cost
it.
Him 90 minutes of the... Exactly, thank you.
You
both.
Said the exact
I said
opposite.
It'll be rubbish.
No, I think you said it'll be a classic, but in a very sarcastic fashion.
No, I said Paolo. Paolo Bandini was saying it'll be great, and I said, no, it'll be rubbish, Paolo. We both know that. And, well, there you go. Very good. Now, Liverpool. They've secured qualification to the knockout stage with a victory over Marseille. Steven Gerrard struck with a header from Xavi Alonso's cross. There, I said it. Anything else you want to add to that?
No.
Good. All right, then. Sid Lowe's coming up in a second or two to tell us about the Champions League from a Spanish perspective and what awaits us on the weekend. So stay tuned for that.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Now, joining us on the line from Madrid, is it Sid Lowe? Hello, Doctor.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, Sid, and yourself?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
Excellent. I'm not looking at the right piece of paper, am I? Oh, yes, I am. John Nett says, please ask Dr. Sid Lowe which is the correct picture of him, the suave ladies man in world soccer or the football geek on the Guardian Unlimited website?
I question his description of both of those photos, especially the suave ladies man one. That's brilliant. They're just photos from a slightly different period. That's all. One's a little bit earlier than the other.
Which one is earliest, Sid?
The World Soccer one's been there for a long time now, so I think that's probably the earlier of the two photos. I'm probably only about 15 in that photo.
Right, but very suave with it. So you're more in your football geek phase at the moment, which is probably appropriate because we want to know about the facts and figures of the Champions League from a Spanish point of view. Barcelona, first off, in a dead rubber with Sporting Lisbon, but they still made it a heck of an entertaining game.
Yeah, it's not entirely a dead rubber from Barcelona's point of view because they wanted to make absolutely certain that they won the group because they've been looking at the stats, and here we go, here comes a football geek for you. I hope I'm going to get this right because I could well get it wrong, but of 8 times when Barcelona have got through the group finishing second, they've only then progressed twice. So I think there was a real sense that they had to try and win the group. They had to try and get themselves that second game at the Camp Nou in the next phase. And I think that's really, really important for them. But although, by the same token, the way they're playing right now, they probably shouldn't worry about anybody. Mm. But I think they do. And bear in mind that Barcelona as a club, and I think even to some extent, maybe even as a city, it does have that kind of that slight vulnerability that means that even when things are going well, there is a sense that, hang on a minute, we could get caught any minute now.
Well, a 5-2 defeat was certainly put a spring in their step. Sorry, it's 5-2 victory over Sporting. Two players who've had their share of criticism, Henri and Bojan, involved in the scoring there.
Yeah, the second of those two, Bojan scored quite late on and took the penalty that he himself had won and only just squeezed it into the corner. I think that's really, really important for him. I mean, we were talking about this when we were on Monday, that I think emotionally and psychologically he needs things to go well for him. He needs a consistent run of good performances. Henri, I think, slightly less so because Henri is is tough enough and experienced enough that the criticism shouldn't get to him. Although the truth is, over the last kind of 12 or 13 months, he's shown real signs of getting tetchy with some of the criticism made of him. Of course, last year he was saying it was all down to the fact that he missed his daughter and it wasn't a problem. But then he did an interview with Lequipe, as he tended to do when he was on international duty, which of course finds its way back to Spain, to Catalonia. And Omri says, no, that's not what I meant to say, when it quite clearly is what he meant to say. And he complained a bit about the system and about playing wide on the left and that it didn't suit him and that he wasn't the key man that he'd been at Arsenal. But I think actually Omri's played not too bad this season. I think part of it is that there's just a much more positive attitude about the whole club. And that means, of course, that you swallow playing out of position a little bit if you feel like it's going to lead you to something big.
Hmm. Now, elsewhere, Atletico Madrid beat PSV, and they are now through, same situation, though. They're tied with Liverpool on top of that group, so everything's still to be decided as regards the group winner in the final round. Real Madrid, though, joined Juventus in the final 16. They were a little bit nervous about what Juve would do. I did Juventus a big disservice suggesting that they might not try their utmost their away to Zenit St. Petersburg, But they hit the woodwork twice. The Russians hit the woodwork as well once. Well, they had a good crack at it. Juve, it was a 0-0 draw. Zenit are now out. Real Madrid are through. They beat Bati Borisov in a lively 1-0 victory, it says here.
Well, lively might be a little bit over the top. I thought Real Madrid were quite good in the first half. They certainly had the kind of intensity and pace of their game that they've not had in recent weeks. But in the second half, once again, they sort of backed off a little bit and they allowed Bati back into the game. And they weren't particularly impressive, Madrid, in the second half. And yet again, it's a 1-0 victory that doesn't really make them look like a great side. Now, the one thing that everybody's saying that's very positive in Spain is that, oh, it's fantastic to see Sergio Ramos at centre-back. And Madrid look much more secure with Sergio Ramos as a centre-back rather than the right-back. And, of course, on the face of it, that's true, because the last two games, Real Madrid have kept clean sheets and Sergio Ramos has played at centre-back and they've looked more solid. But there's three or four reasons why that may not be entirely true. The first one is, of course, that one of those games is against Recreativo de Huelva and the other game is against Bati Borisov, and with the best will in the world, they're two pretty poor teams. The other one is that all right, they tightened it up, but that might not be so much because Sergio Ramos is at centre-back as because he's not at right-back anymore. And then the third thing is that, well, if you haven't got Sergio Ramos at right-back, that's fine defensively, maybe, because Miguel Torres is very, very solid, but it means that Real Madrid offer very, very little going forward on the right wing, and they still do look horribly imbalanced in terms of the makeup of their side.
They've got a big game coming up this weekend, Sid, at home to Getafe, who, unless I'm mistaken, were the side who halted Barcelona's progress last weekend.
Yeah, Getafe, exactly. They got the 1-1 draw with Barcelona last weekend. Of course, remember, Getafe are also the side that, well, there's a couple of big things to say about Getafe. They're also the side that knocked Barcelona out of the Copa del Rey last year, despite the fact that Barcelona had absolutely hammered them at the Camp Nou, beat them 5-2. It was, of course, that amazing Messi goal, which was absolutely identical to Maradona's goal against England in 1986. And really, if you go to YouTube and put in, I think, Messi-Maradona comparison, it's so similar, it's frightening. And then the second leg, Getafe went and beat them 4-0, Barcelona, at the Colosseum. And then the other thing is that they've never been beaten by Real Madrid at home in La Liga. Now, obviously, that's not quite as good as it sounds, because their first season was 2004-2005. So there's not that many games, but they have got a good record against them. And they are a very, very difficult side to beat. So I think this is the start of a run of difficult games for Real Madrid, when they might finally be tested and tested properly.
It's a derby, isn't it? Getafe are on the outskirts of Madrid?
Yeah, Getafe are just south of Madrid. I mean, in a way, it's not really Madrid. It's a dormitory town that grew up around the aerospace industry, which was very, very big. Getafe has grown from something like 30,000 to about 180,000 in the last 10 or 15 years. But it's part of Madrid now, in so much as the Madrid Metro reaches it, although it is the Metro Sur, the southern metro extension. It is part of Madrid, and the fact that people from Getafe would consider themselves madrileños, but I think they would consider themselves from Getafe first.
My word, you are a mine of information. Look forward to hearing from you, if we may, on Monday.
Yep, speak to you then. Good stuff.
Thanks, Sid.
Cheers, bye.
Now, elsewhere in the wide world of the Champions League, no more European football for Celtic there, Kevin.
What a relief for them. So, I kind of knew they'd lost. I got this, the Emirates, I got this text from the end saying, bugger, bugger.
Right.
I think this meant something had gone wrong in Alford.
A poster was asking when your book's coming out.
When I write it.
Right, it's not finished yet.
No.
All right, then.
No. Let's not talk about the two sensitive subjects.
Right, okay, the book is on Celtic, for those who are not...
Celtic have taken 1 point from 51 travels.
Isn't that one from 54?
Is there a worse away record anywhere in football?
There can't be.
I wouldn't imagine so. No. No.
Actually, the curious thing was that they, I just saw bits of it, but that was one of their better efforts the other night, winning 1-0. Yeah. Should have had a penalty and missed chances, but then, of course, deflected goal and an OG.
And no Scottish team won a match in Europe this season.
Well, no, that's true, but Celtic have one left, so who knows. But yes, but you're right, absolutely zilch.
My word. There's a dramatic final day coming up in Group B. We mentioned this. Werder Bremen are out the running, but Panathinaikos aren't, because they beat Inter at the San Siro and Anorthosis Famagusta. Was it you, John, who told us what Anna thought? No, it was Barney Roney, wasn't it? He was sitting in the same chair where you are. Erectile.
We look very
dysfunction.
Similar, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. They had a draw with Werder Bremen, and he said moving swiftly along, which means that they, Anorthosis, are battling to join Inter through in the next round. Inter still goes through, despite the fact that they're only a couple of points clear of everybody else because of head-to-head results. Olegger, who you may recall from our time in Vienna.
I do.
Posting in saying, Henk Ten Cate is the only coach to have beaten Mourinho in Europe away from home. Since he was also the brains behind the Rijkaard Barca team, he has now done that twice. So maybe Ten Cate is actually the true special one, or the very, very special one. Decent shout there. I have to say, it was massively against the run of play, Panathinaikos' goal, but a goal nonetheless. And I've put my Italian paper somewhere else. But no question who the Italians blame for it, and it's that man Jose Mourinho.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What were they saying about
him? He just got the formation wrong, Barry. He stuck Figo out there. Nobody's quite sure why. And then when that didn't work, he just threw forwards at the problem, and everyone looked very confused. They did look really confused and thoroughly miserable, Inter. And that's just something that you find with them a lot. They are often just miserable looking. And Ibrahimovic missing chances, Adriano missing chances, all the usual things. And whistles from the crowd, even though I think probably at that point they hadn't quite twigged that despite the home defeat, they were already safely through. They now have to worry about, trying to secure top place in the group.
When you mentioned Adriano,
yes.
I'm thinking about Drogba again.
Yeah.
Both of them are a problem. Why would swapping problems be a help to either club?
Well, I think that Drogba's record when he's not causing problems is substantially better than Adriano's when he's... But he is a lot younger, Adriano. I don't know. I mean, I think Mourinho's using him at the moment, but I think Inter would welcome Drogba. I mean, it's true, as Moratti said, the owner, he said, we're not interested in Drogba, we don't need strikers. Hmm. But I think their situation suggests otherwise. They don't score goals, no. Inter.
I also wonder whether Drogba's knee would survive a medical. Anyway.
Roma, though, eh? We haven't talked enough about them yet. Surely Totti's back, confidence is back. Got a big game coming up this weekend against Fiorentina. They're all the way down in 14th still, Roma. But... beat Fiorentina, they're going to be at home, and they'll be creeping even further up. Fiorentina, of course, now out of the Champions League. Bit of a morale blow that, because they were beaten and well beaten at home by Lyon, who are through in their group to the last 16, along with Bayern Munich. My last bit of Champions League information, the fact that poor old Fenerbahce are not only out of the Champions League and unlikely to even make the UEFA Cup, because they would have to win away at Dynamo Kiev in Ukraine, which they don't do they, Fenerbahce? They don't win away. So there you go. Aragonés, adios.
The Panathinaikos and Famagusta group, they're just competing to be the team that everybody wants to draw in the knockout stage, aren't they?
Basically. Yeah, but you have to say, they're not as easy a draw as you might think.
No, they're probably
like
not.
Hands. Don't you think? Hands, we all know they've got five fingers. Try drawing them. Buggers, aren't they?
Drawing hands.
Yeah, it's really difficult
to draw.
They're not, John. Look how many of the old Renaissance they'd have them folded away in pockets and stuff. John, that's
perfect.
Can we get
that looks more like a tree than a hand.
You know what, John? You're right. I'm sorry. If only you've been around 500 years ago, the Renaissance would have been.
I should probably say before I get pulled up for it on the blog that they're not all dead rubbers, in so much as some teams are still competing to see who will win the group and come second, but I don't really think that matters so much.
Right, okay. Well, that's the important thing. Part three coming up with posts in a second or two. Now, a few things have been as enjoyable this week as trawling through the endless to and fro's between Barry Glendinning and the rest of the world on the Guardian Unlimited posts. Some nuggets in there. If you wish to in any way get involved in the free-flowing debate on the Football Weekly
site. That's what you call it.
Yeah. then just go to the Guardian Unlimited website, follow the link to football, and we're there on the masthead. Or you can find us on Facebook. But I think it tends to be a little bit more fast-moving, doesn't it? I could be wrong about that, the Guardian Unlimited one. Anyway, here's what happened this week. Oh, basically, Barry banged heads with lots of people on the subject of Robbie Keane.
I didn't bang head with lots of people. I think I banged head with
Marcelo Proust.
Well, Marcelo Proust made it known in no uncertain terms that he doesn't care what my opinion on Robbie Keane is. He cares so little that he reads every word I write and listens to every word I say.
Right,
but his haughty indifference was admirable. But men call me Phil, I think.
Yes.
There seems to be...
presumably, then.
Yeah, yeah. I'd imagine. Phil, well, yeah. Who knows what women call him? I don't know.
Right.
Maybe he could let us know.
Right.
But certain Liverpool supporters seem to think that because Liverpool are doing well, it automatically means Robbie Keane is doing well.
Right.
Because Liverpool have had a good start to the season, because Robbie is a part of the team, therefore he has had a good start. I disagree.
All right, Kevin, what do you think? Robbie Keane?
I thought somewhat overpriced.
For £20 million, yeah, that's the key, yeah.
At that age, he's a decent player, but I didn't see how he's going to transform Liverpool, and I'm not convinced he has done so.
John Ashton?
I agree with Kevin. Right. I think he was slightly on the pricey side.
Right, okay. Decent forward, rubbish striker, as one poster attempted to sum things up.
He's not a rubbish striker. I mean, there's no question Robbie Keane is a good player, but he's not having a good season. He's not playing. He's constantly being substituted. His confidence isn't great. He's only scored 3 goals in 21 appearances.
Mm.
And I can only speculate, but I suspect that if you knew Robbie and asked him, are you happy with how you're doing at Liverpool? He would not be.
Alone in New Zealand says that he listened to our last podcast while on a plastic-moulded bed contraption with a tube going up his bottom, going through the motions, in inverted commas, of a colonic irrigation procedure. That's kind of eerie symmetry, isn't it, really?
It's like shit coming in at one end. Going out the other. Did I just steal your gag? I'm sorry.
Anyway, the experience was mildly euphoric, and I'd hardly recommend it to anyone with the whimsy or too much time on their hands.
I was penciled in for one of those.
Were you, Barry?
A few years ago.
For medical reasons?
You were penciled in where?
No, a couple of my mates decided, for want of something better to do in a Saturday afternoon, they'd all get colonic irrigation.
Right.
But I bottled it at the last minute. Not bottled. Pencils, bottles.
Right, okay.
Yes, anyway. I chose not to have my colon irrigated at that.
Right.
They quite enjoyed it.
Well, there is a large body of opinion that such things are... I mean, there are people who actively seek it out as a kind of recreational pastime. Aren't there?
I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, okay. Listen, transfers. Mucalinho, if I'm saying that right, says, why does everybody go on about the January transfer window as if it was the second coming? Name me one January transfer window signing who has made a difference to any team during the remainder of the campaign. Well, I have to say, lots of people did. He does have a little kind of disclaimer on that. He says, even players brought in during the January transfer window who went on to become stars for their team didn't usually play well until the start of the subsequent season. I don't know, lots of people have come in with this. I have to say there are no shortage of football clubs who are looking to break a January transfer signing, like you mentioned Gallas before. John Arnorisa, who apparently Newcastle wants to take off Roma's hands, which I think is excellent news for the Giallorossi.
You can imagine Man City champing at the bit, having had no time to spend money apart from Rubinho in the summer.
But the question is, will it do any good? Somebody, let's have a look. Sven Skohornis, I think, makes the point that it does often make a big difference, but only to the team who the player leaves. And he gives the example of Luis Saha leaving Man United when Fulham were riding high on the table and they subsequently finished up ninth. Howie at 187 says, greatest January transfer, Carlton Palmer going to Southampton. Larson going to Man U on loan, does that qualify?
Well, he did well for them.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Mascherano joining Liverpool in the window. Why are you grinning like that?
No, I'm just grinning at the idea of Carlton Palmer's transfer being the greatest anything for anyone
ever. Did he not lead
to
them staying up?
I don't remember, to be honest.
Okay, well, there you go. I thought this was going to be a big hot debate topic. We were all going to wrestle with this one to and fro.
It's quite hard to remember which players moved in January, isn't it? Although I think there's definitely a case that quite a lot of those players didn't really make huge impacts till the following season.
I think I agree with you, and thus with Mucalinho, that I suspect that the amount of fuss devoted to it is no way matched by the impact of the players who arrive.
Well, there's a lot of fuss this year because the Premiership is so close that there's a feeling that it will be a busier transfer window because teams will be trying to stay up and get into Europe and get up a couple of places, perhaps spending a few more quid than they usually would.
Right.
It'd be interesting to see if it's different from most years.
I mean, the other thing is it's a practical point, isn't it? You aren't going to be able to buy clubs from other Champions League teams, are you? I
mean, you mean cup tied stuff?
Yeah, cup tied. And also, if they're still on the tour, they won't want to sell to you in any case. I mean, it's not a natural time to be buying big-name players. People were unwilling to deal.
Well, isn't that true in the summer as well?
No, I think that people take stock in the summer now, but they have a longer period to think about it. You know, right. So.
I remember when we started doing the minute-by-minute or sort of rolling report on transfer deadline day, we were sort of ready to be, you know, really busy day and the January window closed. And, it's just all you could hear was grasshoppers clicking in the background.
Which they do a lot of in
our office, yes. Which is why we're moving. Get rid of those bloody grasshoppers.
Oh, dear. Right, OK. A couple of things we should mention, which I really don't know as much as I should about. And I'm looking at John Ashton when I say this. One is what's happening in the FA Cup this Saturday.
Yeah, second round day, or second round weekend, as it's become now.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got...
There's some on Friday, there's some on Monday, I think.
I think there is, yeah. I think that's right. So there's a few interesting...
Every day is a cup final.
Well, every one. The magic of the cup lasts for 4 days these days. They've sort of portioned it out.
Imagine if you wore those pink boots in the cup. How magic would that be?
Well, you see, the magic of the cup would probably cancel out the magic of the pink boots. So there'd be no magic at all.
It'd be like Harry Potter's wand and Voldemort's wand fusing and stuff. Nobody's seen that.
No, of course I've seen that many times. I'm ready to talk about that right now, John. Far more about that than... go on.
Well, in sort of, there's a few sort of interesting ties. We've got Histon hosting Leeds. Histon, the top of the Blue Square Premier League, having been in the Eastern Counties League in 2000. They play at a brilliant stadium. It's called the Glass World Stadium. Which I think is just a fantastic name for a stadium. So there's a potential upset there, and obviously
nobody
throws
any stones there.
Precisely,
because they should.
Yes, yeah. You know.
Okay. Alfreton travel to Scunthorpe, and all their players are going to travel by car, which is one of the things that tends to happen in the early rounds.
Why?
Of the cup. Because Alfreton's not a million miles away from Scunthorpe. It's sort of Derbyshire, Lincolnshire, and quite a lot of their players live in the Scunthorpe area.
Well, shouldn't they get a coach anyway, then?
Apparently it's for part of their routine now. They've travelled by car to all their other games in the cup, so they're carrying on that in the hope that...
What happens if they draw Torquay or something like that?
Well, then it's a long journey, isn't it, for them? Stop off at a little chef on the way, I guess. But it's a bit like Alan Cork's beard. Do you remember Alan Cork and his beard? When this is a Sheffield United story from the early 90s when we reached the semi-finals and he grew his beard and refused to shave it until we went out.
Right.
Which we did in the semi-finals to Wednesday.
Why, as a matter of interest, are you refusing to shave yours? What's going on there?
Well, just until I get knocked out of the FA Cup. I've not actually entered it yet, then it's going to be a long time waiting.
I thought it was because you're too tight to buy those expensive Mac 3 razor blades or something.
No, I've got myself an electric one now. Basically.
Can I get my little bit of FA Cup research out just before you... Because Kurz and Ashton are the...
Mm-hmm.
No relation to John Ashton, are the lowest ranked team left in the competition. So they're travelling to Kidderminster Harriers.
Right.
Average attendance, Curzon Ashton, 223.
Damn.
I take your Curzon Ashton and I raise you an average attendance.
I have never felt more ignorant for listening to this parade of knowledge.
I've never felt more something. But okay. Can we move on, then?
Oh, Curzon Ashton, sorry, I knew there was something interesting I had to say about their biggest claim to fame is that one of their players is a hotel porter who once played for the Gambia in a match against George Weah and Liberia.
All right.
I didn't know
that one.
Stunned you into silence.
Is that my will to live over there?
It's leaving the room, yes.
The other interesting, well, I think it's interesting, possible upset, Eastwood taking on Wickham. Eastwood of the Northern Premier have won 7 of their last 8 games. Wickham top of League 2, chance of an upset. But the reason I mention that is because Eastwood have got my favourite lower league nickname, which is the Badgers.
Oh, nice one.
Just
called
the Badgers.
Okay, we were going to mention the Football League's quota plans, but I think that's enough excitement for now. So let's just move straight on to the Premier League. Obviously, we've dealt with the two kind of headline fixtures, the Manchester Derby and Chelsea. Arsenal, which is also, of course, a derby. You've got, what else have you got? What grabs your attention here? Aston Villa, up in the top four now, aren't they, Kevin? You were enjoying their hospitality last week. They are now going to welcome Fulham, who I'm always moved to consider one of the worst performing away teams in the Premier League. And indeed, stats to some extent bear this out, because they've only won 3 in the last, 42
away but they just drew at Anfield.
Exactly, They had a rocky start to the season, but they seem to be gelling nicely,
well,
don't they?
They spent some money in the summer, and I think they have improved a bit. I guess it's Aston Villa now are now expected to win games, and how they deal with that is a challenge.
But you'd think that, I'm not sure how John Carew's fitness is looking, but Bong Lahore, Ashley Young, they'd probably look forward to tearing up the...
They're now sort of suggesting John Carew wouldn't necessarily play every game, but that leaves Bong Lahore as a lone striker, and I think that's pretty hard on him.
Well, he's done all right, though, hasn't he?
I believe I read in one of the Free London newspapers yesterday that John Carew was spotted strutting his stuff in trendy West End nightclub Funky Budda. A couple of nights ago, which would suggest his fitness is pretty good.
I think he has been injured, though, hasn't he? I mean, yeah, he's a bit injury prone, doesn't he? He's got a record of...
He's certainly nightclub prone, anyway.
Yeah. Borough? Right, OK.
I don't think anyone's ever embarked on a sentence involving Middlesbrough with that much excitement.
OK, Middlesbrough taking on Newcastle United. It's interesting. I tell you what, you say that because you think Borough not very exciting, but hear this. The last 8 league games at the Riverside have produced 29 goals. That's an average of, 3.6 per game.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Borough would do well this season. Yeah. They certainly have the makings of a good team, but they're very inconsistent. And just when you think they're going to get into the stride and string a decent run together, they don't.
Right. So
I don't really know what to make of them.
But against Newcastle, who are now in the bottom three, have gone 10 Premier League games away without a win?
You would think Middlesbrough should win. But
say it, Barry. It's a derby. They'll win that, won't they?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Kevin?
Yeah, I agree. I think Middlesbrough have a good squad and they've been underperforming quite severely of late. And, they're going to win for a change. Why not?
Portsmouth are playing Blackburn Rovers this coming weekend. Blackburn are now gone 8 games without a win. And, in fact, between them, they've only had one win in the last 12 games. Very worrying. Two sides.
Yeah, I think it's friend of the pod or friend of yours, Paul Ince. It's difficult for him, the Blackburn job, isn't it?
Yeah.
He has shown. I saw somebody saying it's difficult handling big players from ones he had, his previous clubs. But it can't be that different. I mean, Blackburn's not exactly a kind of Hollywood football club, is it?
It's still a reasonable step up from Milton Keynes,
I suppose. But I would have thought if you can do a job, you can do a job, and the skills are transferable.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, although I guess going back to the sort of transfer thing, perhaps. For Blackburn, Roque Santa Cruz, if they can hold on to him, it might be important for the relegation battle that they're going to be stuck in, by the looks of things.
Also, I remember seeing in the pod last season that Mark Hughes leaving, he had left at a good time because it's hard to take Blackburn any further forward than that.
Well, indeed. Stoke are taking on Hull. No team has won more home games than Stoke this season. No team at all. They have a better home record, this including draws, than Chelsea do.
Mm.
That is interesting. Equally interesting... And prepare to raise your eyebrows over this. Hull, if only away games counted in the Premier League, Hull would be third.
I love it, if only. If only my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle.
Indeed. Anyway, there you go. They're facing each other. Sunderland, maybe this will interest you more, Barry, are taking on Bolton Wanderers. Sunderland lost 4 straight.
It's a tough one to call. I don't know if it's just me, but can any of you see a standout winner in any of those fixtures? Because I can't.
Well, I don't know, but I'm worried about the situation at Sunderland, as you can imagine I would be. And Bolton are a form team right now, aren't they? They're rocketing up the league and piling in the results and stuff.
They're playing well, yeah. That's the game that I'm doing this weekend.
Is it, John?
Yeah, I've got the long journey up there to the Stadium of Light. My first trip there, actually, which will be fun. But I haven't done any research on it yet, so I can't really offer a great deal of analysis on the game. I could tell you how long the train takes and that I have to change at Newcastle.
It's a very dreadful home run for Roy Keane, wasn't it, the results recently?
Isn't it strange how he's sort of coming under that sort of little bit of pressure?
We've got that classic thing of being a fairly big spend in the summer and then people assuming that you will rock it up the table, which certainly hasn't happened. But,
Spurs are taking on Everton, Barry, and Liverpool are taking on West Ham. West Ham have just had some very bad news, or have they, Kevin? Is that very bad news, or was that all factored into their plans? The fact that they can't now appeal against the decision to award Sheffield United in the regions of £30 to £40 million as compensation for what was, they're now saying, an illegal demotion.
Well, I doubt if legal manoeuvres are quite over yet, are they? I mean,
but wasn't this a major...
It's a major problem, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a... Yeah, and I add that to the doubts about the Icelandic funding and so on.
Yeah.
You can imagine this is a club that, no matter what they might say, is a club that must be up for sale before long.
Right.
And what kind of price they'd get for it is another
question. And
what
effect that has on the players as well, because any kind of uncertainty or any kind of excuse that players can latch onto is usually grabbed with both both hands, I find, unless that the squad is particularly well-led. I'm not sure how Gianfranco Zola's doing from that point of view.
It's tough, isn't it, for little Gianfranco, because it's such a rocky time for the club. It looked, when he came in, that it was going to be sort of a slightly transitional period, but it seemed like he had the team and had the stability to at least get them moving forward to some extent. But the whole off-the-field shenanigans have really sort of knocked them back, I think.
There you go.
James, before we move on, can we mention the Birmingham Wolves game in the Championship?
Please.
First,
John,
against second.
Yeah,
it's the big bit of a Midlands derby thing going on as well. Wolves have won 7 on the bounce, absolutely flying away at the top. Birmingham have won their last 3. And it's a big. It's the early kickoff on Saturday.
So. Right. Wolves not been fantastic with wingers and Iwilumo not missing open goals, unlike Scotland, and winning at Sheffield Wednesday.
He won at Bramall Lane in the week, and the goals that they scored were fantastic. Iwilumo stuck them away really well, and he got a brace at the weekend against Blackpool. But I don't think they were particularly impressive in either of those games. It's sort of. They're good enough to beat teams. They're not sort of really hammering them at the moment. But they're certainly playing as well, if not better, than Birmingham, who are sort of nervously, again, a very strong, resolute in defence. Still not. Yeah. They've scored a few more goals
recently. They haven't clicked, have they, Birmingham this season?
Not quite, no. There's sort of problems in midfield, and although they're solid, they don't score enough goals, although they've got 5 in the last 2 games. So it'll be interesting to see. It's one of those games that should be a great advert for the Championship of the top 2 teams, both well clear at the top. Whether that'll turn out to be the case, who knows.
What time's that, John?
It's a 12:45 kickoff on Saturday, so it's on TV.
Excellent stuff, John. Many thanks for that, and for everything else today. Thanks to you as well, Barry, producer Pete, Kevin McCarra, and you, the listener. That's our Football Weekly Extra for this week. We'll be back with Football Weekly, a vastly different companion piece, on Monday, so see you then.